You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I'm your host, Adam Miller, and today we are having an interesting conversation about something that we often don't talk about, probably because there's a little bit of shame surrounded with the situation. That's when we're feeling that attitude or that struggle of wanting to give up, because when we're doing the work of the Lord, sometimes it's difficult. It's not always easy. His burden is light, but we still must carry it in a world that is not very light. So we're joined by Christopher Ash, who is the author of a new book called Zeal Without Burnout, Seven Keys to a Lifelong Ministry of Sustainable Sacrifice. I'm really encouraged to find out more about this book and also to share it with you, our listeners, because we want to encourage you, as we always say, to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace. Christopher Ash, thank you so much for being a part of the Many Voices for That One Message.
I'm very glad to be with you.
Why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about your background, because it ties in very close to the content of this book. Your ministry and your support ministry to other churches and other pastors, but something that you serve there in the United Kingdom, correct?
Yes, certainly. I served as an assistant pastor, and then I served as a pastor of a small church plant on the edge of Cambridge in the east of England. And then after that, after leading that for a while, I went to central London, and I was involved in a ministry of the Proclamation Trust, something called the Cornhill Training Course, where we trained people for Bible teaching ministries, and I led that for 11 years. I suppose 500 or so students went through during that time. And so I've had experience both of being a pastor and of seeking to train and equip those who would, many of them, become pastors or cross-cultural missionaries or gospel workers of one sort or another.
And this is something in your work with other pastors and your own ministry yourself, you've seen the challenges of doing ministry on the front lines in an area that really requires a great deal of sacrifice and commitment.
Yes, I've had some personal experience of getting to the edge of burnout in the early days of leading the church plant. I remember staring out of the window and just thinking there was nothing left. The batteries were flat, and I was on the edge of burnout. And then much worse, really, after, I think, 8 years leading the Bible training course in London, I had what I think in retrospect you'd call some kind of a nervous breakdown. And so I've had some personal experience of burnout or the edge of burnout. And also, really since beginning to speak about it, I've had all manner of conversations with particularly young men or middle-aged men struggling and feeling that they're in danger of that. It's been extraordinary, really. I guess I've written a dozen or so books, but of all the books I've written, this is the one that's provoked, I think, most pastoral response, people reaching out to me and asking for help and to talk about these things. It's been quite sobering, really.
Why is it that that burnout is such a problem for those in the ministry? Why isn't the ministry rewarding in and of itself?
Yeah. Well, in some ways it is. It's a wonderful thing to be supported, even partially, to tell people the good news of Jesus is the most wonderful privilege. And I guess there is a danger that those of us involved in that just become a bit grumpy and forget what a wonderful privilege it is. But there are particular pressures. I think there are pressures of working odd hours, because we have to be available for people when people are available. But there are also pressures that the in many walks of life, what you achieve is to some extent measurable. There are measurable outcomes. But in gospel work, the things that matter most are either not measurable or scarcely measurable. A greater depth of Christ-likeness, it's very hard to measure. And so people say, or you ask yourself, what have I done in the last month? And there'll be some superficial things. I've delivered some sermons. I've visited people. I've led some committees, whatever it may be. But the things that matter most deeply, that we know matter most deeply, are not measurable. And so there's the pressure of thinking, there's always more to do. Have I done enough? Surrounded by an ocean of need.
And for pastors, this kind of burnout can look pretty differently. It can become a kind of moment of crisis where they have a major response to it, or it could also just become one where they just slowly become less involved, right? There's a lot of different ways that they can react to this burnout.
I think that's exactly right. And it's hard to say why some people hit a barrier suddenly and why others it is a sort of downward spiral into perhaps despair or perhaps cynicism or perhaps just a joyless weariness. I guess it's partly our own temperaments and partly perhaps the environments in which we serve. Some of us have been privileged to have very supportive teams around us, but many in pastoral leadership are very lonely, really. At least they are in the UK, where I live.
As we think about that aspect of being very lonely, I saw that. My dad was a pastor, and I saw that more with my mom than I saw with my dad. But there is a sense of loneliness in ministry. Why is that?
That's a very interesting comment about your mom. I think sometimes for a pastor's wife, it's almost harder. That little aside, I was very struck by that. Why is it lonely? I think in some of our churches, it may be because we don't have a good model of plural eldership, of shared leadership, in which the leadership really is shared. But even when we do, any healthy church needs somebody who is the lead leader, the senior pastor, whatever designation we use. And there is a loneliness in that. I remember when I moved from being an assistant pastor to being senior pastor, and I didn't think anything, I don't know about your experience, I didn't think anything quite prepares you for that sense that God is going to call you to account for the oversight of the souls of men and women in your care. It's an extraordinary privilege, but also burden.
I want to talk a little bit about the comparisons of where you're at in the United Kingdom and where we're here in New England. It's very different than what we have in the Bible Belt, where you can have a really large church with a multiplicity of people on staff and even support staff. Many of the pastors here in New England are bivocational, or they are the only person on staff, even if they are full-time. Many of them feel under-equipped, and they feel overburdened and overworked. This is not a problem that only affects the people at large churches. This is something that can affect a church that's around 100 or even lower.
I think that's right. I think in some ways it's even more acute. When I led a small church plant, I moved from a university city center church in Cambridge, which in British terms is relatively large, perhaps 600 or so members, which in our UK terms is relatively large, and a staff team. And I was the only paid member of staff for the church plant. We didn't have any apprentices or anything to start with. I suspect most pastors or ministers in the UK are in that position, that the only person who's paid or even half paid. So I suspect there's quite a similarity with you guys in New England. And I suspect, looking around the world as a whole, that most people are pastors of small churches, and they are very often inadequately supported. So I think in some ways there are pressures in a big church, but I suspect it may be more acute in smaller churches.
You talk about seven keys to a lifelong ministry and a sustainable sacrifice. just the first part of that, what are those seven keys in just a real quick fashion?
We need sleep, but God does not. That's the first one. We need days off or Sabbath rests, but God does not. We need friends, but God does not. We need inward renewal, but God does not. So the first four are things that we need because of our mortality. And then the fifth is, the fifth, sixth, and seventh are really motivational. So the fifth one is to beware celebrity. The sixth one, the encouragement that ministry is worth it. And the final one, that we should rejoice in God's grace to us in Christ rather than in any gifts we might have.
Where did you come up with these seven keys of understanding what a pastor actually needs? These are things we often overlook.
Yes. I mean, in many ways, there's nothing very clever about them. They're biblical common sense, I think. I can't quite remember how I came up with them. I was asked to do a seminar at Alistair Begg's pastor's conference, The Basics. And I thought, because this was going on in my life, I thought this would be good to think about. I think I came up with the first four to start with and then worked towards the motivational ones. I was just trying to think, what does the Bible teach and what are the kind of underlying issues? What makes us burn out? What are the avoidable causes of burnout?
You talk about a sustainable sacrifice, and that's really the seven keys. They build up to that. Why is it that we look to what we're doing in the ministry as a sacrifice?
I guess discipleship is a daily taking up of the cross, and if discipleship is that, then all ministry is bound to involve sacrifice. My nervousness in writing the book is that there will be some who need to work a bit harder. And I would hate this kind of book to lead those who are idle to justify their idleness. So there is sacrifice. It is going to cost. Some of it will be unavoidable. The Apostle Paul had sleepless nights and shipwrecks and who knows what else. And that was not avoidable. That was a necessary cost of ministry. And that's partly why I called it zeal without burnout rather than just burnout. But what I'm trying to tease out is what is avoidable, what comes because of our pride or our neglect of God's patterns for how to do things. So I was really looking at the kinds of things which, in God's goodness, do lie within our control, while recognizing that plenty of others don't.
I think that this book, although it's written to pastors and leadership in ministry, I think that the principle that we have here really applies to everyone that wants to be involved in the work of the church, and we are all part of the body of Christ, so that is a very key element that we all have to consider. How do these principles also apply to the members that are serving in the church?
Yes, I did have them in mind as well. As you rightly say, the primary aim was pastors and people on church ministry teams. But there are many men and women, zealous disciples of Jesus, who are involved in normal secular jobs or their mothers at home or all sorts of other perfectly normal things, but who are serving sacrificially, perhaps teaching children or youngsters in church, all manner of different ways. And they too can burn out. So I wanted to write for them as well. And I hope that the principles that I've listed out and talked about are general principles, as you say, for all disciples of Jesus. I suspect they're the kinds of things which maybe shouldn't need to be said, because as soon as I've said them, I think, well, that ought to be obvious. But they weren't obvious to me. I've had to learn them, and I suspect they may not be obvious to a number of us.
You know, I think of my time in pastoral ministry, and I think of the pastors that I've worked with and have friends and pastored with them, alongside of them. I think of the challenges that often happen between the pastor and the person in the congregation, where the pastor is either asking too much of their congregation, and that's why they will burn out, or they're not asking enough. They're not willing to let go of certain areas and let other people that are really passionate do the things that they're doing, and that can cause a little bit of a burnout. It's kind of this almost sometimes a tug of war happening between the pastor and the congregation, isn't it?
It can be, Adam. You're quite right. And it can go wrong in so many different ways. I think it's a wonderful aim to have a local church which really breathes the atmosphere of grace, so that the church members are showing grace in their attitude to the pastor and pastoral leadership, and likewise the other way around, so that giving, not just financial, but giving of ourselves is something that is glad and joyful. And that's a wonderful thing. I remember one of the churches my wife and I belonged to for, I think about 8 years, when I was running the Bible training course, and the pastor was just wonderful in setting a tone of grace, so that he worked gladly and joyfully, and we served gladly and joyfully.
What advice would you have for the pastors who are really struggling to maintain what they think is their responsibility, their personal responsibility, or their perceived responsibility, and the congregation who wants to do more or has an idea about a program? What kind of advice would you have for the leadership of the church and how to navigate that?
It depends so much on the circumstances, doesn't it? I remember when I moved from a church with a staff team to a small church plant, and I said to our planting group, I said, well, it's like moving from a battleship to a little motor torpedo boat. And on a battleship, people have their specialized jobs, but motor torpedo boat, anybody does anything, really. It's a small team. And it was a great comfort to me to think that so long as we were meeting under the word of God and praying together, we were doing what a church does. There were all manner of programs we couldn't run. We didn't have the resources that a larger church did. But that didn't matter. We were doing what God gave us grace and resources to do. And I found that was a very freeing, very liberating thing. And there is a pressure, perhaps in some of our circles, to feel that we have to try to compete and to run all the programs that other churches run, that we're in a kind of marketplace, come to us because we run this, that, and the other. And it's a worldly thing, but it needs to be fought, doesn't it? I don't know what your experience was as a pastor, but I find that when I was an active local church pastor, although I believe in grace, my instinct was to think, well, I need to bash them over the head with a bit of law to get them to do what I want them to do. And it's counterintuitive to say, no, I go on preaching and teaching and modeling the grace of God in Jesus, because that's what changes people. I wonder if that's a danger that some of us pastors slip into.
I think I've been involved in church planting as well, and I think it has a unique dynamic all on its own, where everyone is ready. They come to the church because they're ready to do whatever works asked of them, because they're seeing something that's being built. But it's oftentimes the churches that have been around for a long time where you start to have those unnecessary conflicts, and sometimes I think in a way they become manufactured conflicts, where the pastor is trying to do one agenda, but the people have another agenda. That can be a huge issue that causes people to burn out, because they're spending their energy on stuff that doesn't matter.
Yes, yes, yes. There's also a sense, isn't there, in which a church leadership needs to agree on what we're going to focus on, of the many worthwhile, gospel-hearted things we could do, that there is a danger of overheating and of just firing off in too many different directions all at once. And there may be times when we need to make choices as churches and say, there are many good things we can do, but we've agreed we're going to do this. and we're not going to do that. It's always a hard thing to do when that is a good thing as well.
I love that grace is at the very core of the zeal without burnout. And the question I have now is a very, very general, but I think it gets to the heart of what we've been talking about, is that how grace is attached to zeal, how that aspect of our spending time in God's Word, of our Sabbath rest and doing all these things, these seven principles, is to really realize our dependency upon God and how that gives us zeal, how resting gives us strength.
Yes, yes, it's a paradox, isn't it? A real paradox. The more I'm gripped by the free generosity of God towards me in Jesus, the more that glad zeal wells up within me so that I'm serving out of that overflow of grace. And it's so different from the way the world operates, and it's so different from the way in which churches can operate, which is really beat them over the head with law and frighten them into doing it or shame them into doing it. There's a gladness and a lightness of step and a joy about that, which is a wonderful thing. You know a church which is infused with an atmosphere of grace when you belong to one.
But even in the best environment, there can be individuals in leadership or in support staff who are really losing the focus and trying to do more than what they're able to do, and they're not applying these seven principles. What advice do you have, and what warning signs do you have? Because sometimes we don't notice we've burnt out until we're already spent. So what kind of warning signs do you have?
That's a really helpful question. The kinds of warning signs, I think often being accountable, being in relationships with good friends whose counsel, who know us and watch us and see, can watch out for us. And if you're leading a team, then watching out for that in your own team. But I suspect for many of us, there are things like an uncharacteristic shortness of temper. I don't often lose my temper, but the occasions when I do, it's often a warning sign of stress. That's not an excuse, but the fact that I've lost my temper may be a sign that I'm stressed. Or for some, it's darker things, isn't it? A desire to find some kind of a buzz, perhaps from alcohol or maybe something darker like pornography, those kinds of things, which are real danger signs when somebody's beginning to do that. But we need good friends to be close to us. And for those of us who are married, I think we need friends other than our spouse. Otherwise, there's a tremendous burden. I have a lovely and wonderful wife, but it's good for her that I have men friends who know me well. And that's a help to her as well as to me.
What advice do you have for the members of the church who love their pastor and don't want to see them burn out? I know that people with the best intentions can often be the people that become some of the biggest challenges because they insert themselves into your life and they just add more flame to the fire that's already burning out. So
yes, that's right. The funny thing is that I'm about to embark on trying to write a little book on how to look after our pastors for the Good Book Company with exactly that in mind. And I don't often use Facebook, but I put out to former students, mainly of the Bible course, on Facebook. I said, can you give me some examples of good and bad practice? And of course, some came with bad examples, but a number came with really good examples of churches where they'd been watched and encouraged and supported and given or encouraged really to take breaks when they needed them for all sorts of reasons, family reasons, health reasons. And it was wonderful to see that kind of watchfulness where particularly the equivalent of the board of elders or the deacons or whatever the church polity works, where they hadn't been regarding the pastor as the CEO of a business to be assessed on whether the turnover was up and the profit was up, but they'd been supported and encouraged, high standards expected and looked for, but in the context of pastoral support. I thank God when I was an assistant pastor, I had a senior pastor who, Mark Ashton in the middle of Cambridge, was a fine man with an extraordinary capacity for hard work. But when I was really tired, he never imposed his expectations on me. He said, no, you need a break, take a break. And there was never any bad feeling about that. And the result was that I worked better. Just last night, I said to our senior minister at St. Andrew the Great in Cambridge, I said, I'm really tired because we've had a family bereavement, and would you mind if I missed a leadership training day on Saturday? And he quoted Spurgeon to me. He said, Spurgeon said that it's not selfish of a harvester to take a break to sharpen his sickle, which is wonderfully antiquated in its way of putting it. But I thought that was great. It was that sense of, no, you take a break, without any sense of guilt. I'm very grateful to be part of a church shaped like that.
We've been talking with Christopher Ashe about his book, Zeal Without Burnout, Seven Keys to a Lifelong Ministry of Sustainable Sacrifice. It's a simple and accessible book, but it's profound and it's impactful. It's encouraged me, and I think that it will encourage all people in every walk of life, whether in direct ministry or in support ministry in the local church, which really should be all of us. Christopher, thank you so much for being a part of our ministry here at Songtime and being a part of the many voices for that one message.
Thank you, Adam. It's been a privilege for me.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.